welcome to the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for today, Monday, October 18. I'm your reader, Ken Lauder. First, let's take a look at the weather for eastern Iowa. Today, we're expecting a sunny day with winds from the south at 5 to 15 miles per hour. And Cedar Rapids will see a high of 73 in Cedar Rapids and 74 in Iowa City, falling to a low tonight of 46 in Cedar Rapids and 47 in Iowa City. Sunset tonight is at 6:20 p.m., sunrise tomorrow morning at 7:24 a.m. for a total daylight period of 10 hours and 57 minutes. And from the front page of today's Gazette, severe flu season may pose risk of a twin-demic. This is a story by Michael Aram of the Gazette staff. Abnormal influenza activity last year means it may be harder for experts to predict the 2021-2022 flu season, but national experts already are warning Americans they could be in for a severe season. Reduced population immunity due to a lack of influenza activity since the pandemic began in March 2020 could mean the United States will face an early and possibly severe flu season this year, U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention officials have warned. That potential for a twindemic of both widespread flu and COVID-19 cases is at the forefront of local public health officials' minds as the winter months draw closer, highlighting the importance of getting vaccinated against both viruses and taking other steps to avoid infection. Our healthcare partners have been working so hard for so long. Let's not burden them with things we can prevent so easily, said Sam Jarvis, Community Health Division Manager at Johnson County Public Health. Residents need to do their part by keeping themselves healthy, said Heather Medor, Clinical Services Supervisor at Linn County Public Health. We need to get our flu shot, we need to wash our hands, cover our coughs and sneezes, and stay home when we're sick, she said. Federal health officials note it is difficult to predict the spread and severity of the virus season to season. That's particularly true for this upcoming season, as last year's atypical influenza activity has made it difficult for CDC officials to generate a prediction for this year, Medor said. It's all a guess, Medor said. We won't know until we're there. That's why we need to do all we can to be preventative. Last year's flu season highlights the fact that spread of respiratory viruses is dependent upon behavior, Jarvis said. Despite high levels of testing, the United States saw unusually low influenza activity during the 2020-2021 flu season that contributed to dramatically fewer illnesses, hospitalizations, and deaths, according to the CDC. From September 28, 2020 to May 22, 2021, 1,675 influenza cases were detected by clinical labs across the nation. Other estimates put the total number of flu cases closer to 2,000. Either way, last year's illnesses were dramatically lower than a typical year, when somewhere between 20 million and 40 million Americans get sick with the flu, the CDC states. Total hospitalizations also were the lowest recorded since the Federal Health Agency started collecting that data in 2005. About 750 influenza-related deaths were reported, and the CDC received only one report of a pediatric flu death during the past season. Since federal officials began tracking flu deaths in children, the lowest number reported was 37 during the 2011-2012 season. Experts point to widespread use of face masks, social distancing, and other COVID-19 mitigation practices as the reason influenza spread was dramatically reduced during the 2020-21 season. The community also saw unusually low activity of other respiratory viruses, such as RSV, last winter as a result of these practices. But heading into the upcoming season, vigilance around masking and physically distancing among Iowans is much lower than before, Johnson County's Jarvis said. Local public health officials say everyone should be vaccinated against both flu and COVID-19 heading into this winter. Individuals can now get both shots at the same time at local pharmacies, at healthcare providers' offices, or at other locations that provide the vaccines. People 6 months and older should receive a flu vaccine. This year's flu vaccines are quadrivalent, meaning they contain components to protect individuals from four different flu vaccine viruses, according to the CDC. Medore recommends residents get the flu vaccine now, before there is widespread community spread of the virus. She also emphasizes it's important to be fully vaccinated before the holidays, when people will be gathering with friends and loved ones. Local public health officials also encourage residents to take other steps to keep themselves healthy as part of a layered mitigation approach to preventing widespread infections. In addition to getting vaccinated, individuals should cover their cough, wash their hands, and stay home when they're feeling ill. We hope that the community will keep some of these basic infection prevention measures that are part of the layered approach in mind, Jarvis said. Both public health officials also encourage anyone to seek a COVID-19 test whenever they are experiencing symptoms. Symptoms of the flu include fever, cough, sore throat, stuffy nose, headaches, body aches, chills, and fatigue. Also from today's front page, pandemic derecho ding test scores. Cedar Rapids is elevating student proficiency to 22 goal may not be feasible, a story by the Grace King of the Gazette staff. The Cedar Rapids Community School District saw drops in achievement scores in reading and math at each grade level that took the Iowa statewide assessment of student progress last spring when compared with 2019, which educators say reflects a loss of instructional time last year. The Iowa statewide assessment of student progress is a test taken by students in grades 3 through 11 once a year to measure performance in English, language arts, math, and science. Students were not tested in 2020 because of the pandemic. Officials attribute the drop in achievement to loss of instructional time because of the pandemic and the August 2020 derecho, and as both students and teachers had to adapt to remote learning. The district also switched to the online version of the ISASP, which comes with a pretty common dip in scores, said John Rice, Cedar Rapids Executive Director of Teaching and Learning. The most significant declines in Cedar Rapids were in third grade reading and ninth grade math. These are the average results for Cedar Rapids students on the ISASP test: 59% proficient in English language arts and 50% in math, and 49% in science. This is slightly down from the state average of 69% in English language arts, 66% in math, and 61% in science. African American students have an achievement gap of almost 40 percentage points in each category compared with their white peers, scoring 32% in English language arts, 22% in math, and 20% in science. There's even a bigger gap for English language learner students compared with their non-English language learner peers. English language learners scored 14% in English language arts, 8% in math, and 8% in science. Students with individualized education plans scored 15% in language arts, 15% in math, and 14% in science. During the 2018-2019 school year, district officials set a goal of at least 80% of students scoring proficient or advanced on the assessment in English language arts, math, and science by June 2022. At the time, the district had an average of 70% in assessment scores for 8 years in a row. A growth of 20 percentage points may not be feasible this year, Rice said. The district also had a goal of decreasing the gaps in proficiency rates. Race, English language learner status, and students with an individualized education plan by 20 percentage points by June 2022. The 80% goal for June 2022, which was set before the beginning of the COVID-19 pandemic, is pretty extreme, school board member Jennifer Borcherding said. I would like us as a district to consider to be a little flexible on those goals, all academic goals for growth, just so we're not overwhelming our staff who are already at capacity. There is significant ground to make up for the district to meet the 80% goal, Rice said. We want to be able to address these achievement gaps as quickly as possible. To do this, educators will continue to focus on professional learning, a time for teachers to work together to find ways to better support their students, Rice said. Another focus will be family engagement work, including at least 15-minute phone calls to parents or guardians once a month. School Board President Nancy Humbles said the district is going to have to make major improvements to get everyone up to speed. Borcherding noted that Cedar Rapids students are not alone in this. It's the state, the nation, the world. While the numbers don't look fantastic, it's reflective of the environment we're living in. Across the state, Iowa's reading results varied considerably across grade levels compared with 2019, the first year the test was offered to students. Most grade levels improved, while third graders' scores dropped 14.8 percentage points. Iowa's math scores dropped in every tested grade level compared with 2019. Clear Creek Amana High School students scored in the 80th percentile for grades 9 through 11. Overall, students in the district scored an average of 8.6 to 12.3 percentage points higher than the state average proficiency, and not one grade level fell below state proficiency. These are the results for Clear Creek Amana High students on the ISASP test. Ninth graders scored 86% proficient in English language arts and 72% proficient in math. 10th graders scored 87% proficient in English language arts and 74% proficient in math and 74% proficient in science. And 11th graders scored 85% proficient in English language arts and 70% proficient in math. Only 10th graders take the science assessment. The spring ISASP results at the high school were nothing short of amazing, high school principal Mark Moody said. This is a testament that despite the daily challenges of last year, the entire staff set the tone that we can overcome those challenges we were facing and keep the focus on learning. Also from today's front page, Save Cedar Rapids Heritage preserves an old home and begins a new legacy. The group's first headquarters honors board member killed in a 2020 crash, a story by Gage Miskimmon of the Gazette staff. Nikki Halvorsen was brought to tears when the Historic Preservation Board she's president of suggested it name the organization's first ever headquarters after her late husband and fellow board member. A house once destined for demolition at 606 Fifth Avenue Southeast in the Med Quarter now is officially named the J.E. Halvorsen House honoring the memory of John Eric Halverson, age 32, who was killed last year when his car was struck in a head-on collision. The dedication took place outside the house Friday evening. "It's really special to my family," Nikki Halverson said. "It gives us something to feel pride in, and when I told them, then they were brought to tears." She said making the house a namesake is a great way to honor her late husband's memory and activity in the Save CR Heritage organization. "It's just an incredible way he can live on actively and tangibly," Halverson told the Gazette. "It's not just a plaque on a bench. It's a place that's going to be important, I think, for the community." The two both grew up in Cedar Rapids, meeting at Harding Middle School and becoming best friends while at Kennedy High School. They wouldn't date until Nikki was in graduate school, though last year would have been 20 years since they met. They had been married only 4 years when Eric, he went by his middle name, was killed. The driver charged in the 2020 crash in Walford has yet to go to trial after it has been rescheduled multiple times amid the pandemic. Save CR Heritage's mission is to safeguard historic properties by developing strategies to preserve and reuse them and to raise awareness of the value to the community of historic buildings. For the J.E. Halverson House, the organization entered into an agreement with then-property owner Mercy Medical Center to save the early 1900s house, which was going to be demolished. Mercy sold the house to Save CR Heritage for $1 with a 3-year lease on the land, which Mercy still owns, with the agreement that the house be relocated in the future. Save CR Heritage hopes to move the house to a vacant lot in Wellington Heights. According to the organization's research, Thomas B. F. and Edith L. Linebaugh were listed in the January 1907 City Directory as the home's first residents through 1920. Thomas worked as a clerk for the Railway Mail Service. "Repairs to the house have cost tens of thousands of dollars," Halverson said. "Board members, volunteers, and contractors have spent the past months since moving in earlier this year repairing the building. Repairs included a new roof, plumbing, HVAC, plaster repair, porch stabilization, and electrical work. The organization will use the new headquarters for meetings, workshops on window restoration, and other skills, and to connect homeowners with high-quality, low-cost doors, windows, and other items salvaged from buildings slated to be demolished," Halverson said. Halverson said having the house is a game-changer for the organization. "We're really hoping next year to have those workshops," she said. "Having a house is a big deal because we had no place to do all that before. It will help us support our mission of community education, and having a physical space will take us a lot farther. It's a whole new level for us." Turning to today's Insight page, we have a guest column by Norman Sherman of Coralville, who's worked extensively in politics, including as Vice President Hubert Humphrey's press secretary, and who wrote a memoir entitled From Nowhere to Somewhere, and his piece is entitled Straight Election, Crooked Talk. It's simple. If you know the facts, ignore them, and then tell a contrived story. It's called lying. We tell that to our kids, to difficult spouses, and to those we elect. We also expect our presidents, current and former, to know, like the others, that lying is unacceptable. Even Richard Nixon came to understand that. Would that Donald Trump, like our kids, like most presidents before him, understood and spoke truth after the election, about the election he lost. His recent appearance in West Des Moines was disheartening, hearing Iowans cheer. The election in 2020 was honest and no fraud took place. Donald Trump was told that soon after the election and while still in office. Documents subpoenaed in a New York federal court case contain memos from Trump's own hirelings written within days of defeat and the first lies of a rigged and stolen election. They told Trump they had found no evidence of fraud. There was no ambiguity in what they had found and written, and Trump certainly had it read to him. He was told the truth and ignored it. He convinced millions of Americans that the election was rigged, stolen, and thus illegitimate. Since then, polls show at least 35 million Republicans, at a minimum, say they believe the election was stolen. Trump's performance, and it is acting, about widespread voting fraud is a lie. It's as simple as that. A pro-Trump committee, Stop the Steal, recently hired a company to investigate results in Arizona's Maricopa County. They found that the county had indeed made a mistake. A recount of 2.1 million ballots gave Joe Biden a few more votes and Trump fewer than originally reported. There was no fraud, just a minor mistake that changed nothing. This year brought another opportunity for Mr. Trump to embarrass himself. Trump and his minions, including our Iowa Republican representatives, found the truth elusive about January 6 and resisted efforts to investigate. What others saw as a murderous mob, Trump claims it was essentially just a picnic on the mall by patriots touring historic sites. To others, they had tried to make America great again by destroying historic statues in the home of American democracy. They threatened the life of Vice President Mike Pence. Five people died, including a Capitol Police officer. It was no picnic. What is appalling beyond that is the behavior of the Republican House members, including ours, who refused to establish a nonpartisan commission to study and describe the day's development and execution as best it could be learned. The resolution to establish a congressional committee on which Republicans would sit lost on a party line vote, 222-190. Hostage to the Trump base, they caved, leaving the facts and their honor behind. If they really believed Trump had not incited the mob, the committee they opposed was the way to prove it. Instead, they chose to prevent evidence from being discovered and disclosed. They chose instead to leave their honor shattered like a statue on the floor of the rotunda. Truth was not important. It's as simple as that. A piece by Norman Sherman of Coralville. And we have only one letter to the editor today, and it comes from Chris Rolves of Cedar Rapids, and it's entitled Reelect Jennifer Borcherding to Cedar Rapids School Board. Jennifer Borcherding deserves re-election to the Cedar Rapids Community School District Board of Directors. While serving as board vice president during her first term, she collaborated with board members to create a questionnaire based on state assessment standards that were used to hire Superintendent Noreen Bush. She has also supported a pause in the district facilities plan to reassess community demographics and building needs. She's a strong supporter of career and technical education and is pushing for more opportunities for students in manufacturing and skilled trades. Borcherding has a deep understanding of the CRCSD strategic plan and knows that equity, graduation rate, and student achievement play a role in determining success for our students. She has worked to encourage collaborative partnerships with local organizations and other education-friendly groups. She also has strong support from staff, which is proven by the endorsement of all unionized employee work groups in the CRCSD. Her belief in the importance of public education led her to serve on the Iowa Association of School Boards, where she sits on the IASB Compensation and Benefits Committee. CRCSD will benefit from her collaboration with other school board members around Iowa. The Cedar Rapids Community School District has been challenged with the COVID-19 response, ongoing funding challenges, student and staff retention, and the role of student resource officers in our district. Jennifer Borcherding has served our community well through her first term and deserves to be re-elected on November 2. And you're listening to the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for today, Monday, October 18, on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now let's turn to today's obituaries. First from Riverside, Ethel N. Giroux, age 93, of Riverside, passed away with her family by her side on October 15, 2021 in Coralville. Private family services will be held at Mount Olivet Cemetery in Riverside, Iowa. From Iowa City, Carol E. Calkins, age 84, passed away at her home on Friday, October 15, with her family beside her. Graveside services will be held at 2 p.m. Saturday, October 23, at St. Bridget's Cemetery in Nolan Settlement. Lansing Funeral and Cremation Service is handling the arrangements. From Cedar Rapids, Joanne Schmidt, age 84, passed away on Friday, October 15, at the Dennis and Donna Oldorf Hospice House in Hiawatha following an extended illness. A memorial mass is at 10:30 a.m. Thursday, October 21, at St. Matthew Catholic Church in Cedar Rapids. Visitation will be 1 hour prior to the service at the church, and private interment will be in Mount Calvary Cemetery in Cedar Rapids. Also from Cedar Rapids, Doreen, also known as D. M. Thibault, age 68, of Cedar Rapids, passed peacefully at St. Luke's Hospice on Saturday, October 16. A memorial service will be held at 2 p.m. Friday, October 22, at the Murdoch Linwood Funeral Home and Cremation Service in Cedar Rapids, with a visitation 1 hour prior. Burial will take place at a later date at the Baker Cemetery in Cedar Rapids. And in other death notices from Cedar Rapids, James J. Pospisil, age 38, died Friday, October 15. The Popich Kuba Funeral Service in Cedar Rapids is assisting the family. From Fayette, Venice L. Bantz, age 54, formerly of Independence, died Friday, October 15. The White Funeral Home in Independence is assisting the family. From Iowa City, Elizabeth, also known as Jane Clarahan, age 86, died Sunday, October 17. The Lansing Funeral and Cremation Service in Iowa City is assisting the family. From Monona, Marilyn Lois Lamker, age 86, died Monday, October the 11th. The Leonard Grau Funeral Home and Cremation Service in Monona is assisting the family. From North Liberty, Sharon B. Miller, age 77, died Friday, October 15. The Lansing Funeral and Cremation Service in Iowa City is assisting the family. From Olawine, Joyce I. Amber, age 78, died Saturday, October 16th. The Jameson Schmitz Funeral Home in Olawine is assisting the family. Also from Olawine, Ruth L. Shepherd, age 93, died Saturday, October 16. The Jameson Schmitz Funeral Home in Olawine is assisting the family. From Robbins, Harvey L. Hall, age 65, died Saturday, October 16. The Popich Kuba Funeral Service in Cedar Rapids is assisting the family. And from West Union, Laura May Rothman, age 87, formerly of Postville, died Friday, October 15. The Schutte Grau Funeral Home and Cremation Service in Postville is assisting the family. From West Union, Alan Tupper, age 94, died Thursday, October 14. The Burnham Wood Grau Funeral Home and Cremation Service in West Union is assisting the family. Turning to today's sports page, we have a high school volleyball article entitled, Williams Mustangs Are Going For It Again. The WOMAC title run has Mustangs thinking state. This is a story by Jeff Linder of the Gazette staff. She had the faith. Now Mount Vernon volleyball coach Maggie Willems has the proof. Even when we lost to West Delaware in the regular season, I thought that loss taught us that we had a chance to win a Class 3A state championship, Willems said. And after the Mustangs knocked off the top-ranked Hawks for the WOMAC Conference Tournament Championship Thursday, that championship, that's what we were going after, Willems said. The pursuit begins tonight. Regionals open in full force in Class 3A, nearly full force in 1A, and with a trickle of 2A matches. Among the area's high hopefuls in 3A are number 1 West Delaware, number 6 Mount Vernon, and number 7 West Liberty, all of which can be considered top seeds in their respective regions. Willems is accustomed to deep tournament runs. The Mustangs were 3A state champions in 2019, runners-up in 2020. They're back among the elite with a young, talented crew that features one of the top freshman hitters in the state in Chloe Meester. The Mustangs open with South Tama at home. West Delaware shared the WOMAC East Division title with Marion and Dyersville Beckman and is down a class after reaching the 4A state finals last year. Coach Brett Mather was unhappy with his team's serve reception in the loss to Mount Vernon on Thursday. It will add fuel to our fire, he said. West Delaware welcomes Olwine for its first rounder. West Liberty, led by Drake recruit Macy Daufeldt, hosts Washington. The top area teams in the smaller two classes, Dyersville-Beckman in 2A, Springville and Lisbon in 1A, earned first-round byes and begin their tournament voyages on Wednesday. Among the top area teams in action are Iowa Star Conference South Division champion North Tama, which hosts Meskwaki, and South Iowa Cedar League champion Montezuma, which welcomes Twin Cedars. The postseason opens Tuesday for a few 4A and 5A teams. Two Metro teams were assigned quarterfinal matches. Linmar hosts Waterloo West, and Cedar Rapids Washington welcomes Davenport North. Here's your Dear Abby for today. It's entitled, Woman Searching for Partner Loathes Dates, Dear Abby. I'm a 30-year-old woman who wants to find someone to share my life and start a family with. The problem is I hate dating, at least the early stages. To me, first dates aren't exciting. They're awkward and nerve-wracking. I have tried everything to change my outlook on dating, but I still go into every first date with the same enthusiasm as I'd have for a root canal. Do you have any tips for how to have a more positive outlook? Signed, Hates Dating in Maryland. And Abby responds, I don't know what kind of first dates you are having, but it might benefit you to make them more casual. A lunch, a coffee, a movie, or some other entertainment so a conversation won't become a third degree. If you regard a first date as a chance to make a new friend rather than an audition for a life partner, you might enjoy it more. Dear Abby, a friend brought a birthday cake to the restaurant where we were all meeting and served it after the meal. I voiced my concern that it wasn't fair to the restaurant since we used extra tableware and dishes for the cake and deprived them of a dessert order. Is what she did acceptable, or was I out of line? Signed, No Dessert. Abby responds, if your comments dampened the joy of the occasion, you should have kept your mouth shut. Bringing a cake to a restaurant for a special occasion happens often. However, the polite way to handle it is to first check with the restaurant to be sure that they don't have a policy against it. And from the Iowa Today section, we have a national article, but it's of local interest. It's entitled, Fauci: U.S. to consider mix-and-match boosters for COVID-19. President Joe Biden's chief medical advisor said he expects U.S. regulators to consider whether people who got the one-dose Johnson & Johnson vaccine should get an mRNA shot against COVID-19 as a booster. If you boost people who have originally received J&J with either Moderna or Pfizer, the level of antibodies that you induce in them is much higher than if you boost them with the original J&J, Anthony Fauci said Sunday on ABC's This Week. But the data of boosting the J&J first dose with a J&J second dose is based on clinical data, he said. So what's going to happen is that the FDA is going to look at all those data, look at the comparison, and make a determination of what they will authorize. A so-called mix-and-match booster has been discussed among scientists and government experts, though no timeline has been released for when it might be officially considered. The issue is complicated by safety, supply, and concern about confusing public messaging. Food and Drug Administration experts recommended a second Johnson & Johnson shot for people 18 and older last week. They also backed a third dose of the Moderna Incorporated shot, which, unlike J&J, uses mRNA technology for people at high risk of contracting COVID-19. The recommendations require backing by the FDA and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, which could come as soon as this week. The Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine, also based on the mRNA technology, was first cleared for boosters in September. More than 10 million third shots have been given in the United States. Fauci said the individual choice of which booster to get would depend on several factors, including the risk of myocarditis, a heart inflammation that some evidence suggests is a risk for young men who get mRNA vaccines. I believe there's going to be a degree of flexibility of what a person who got the J&J originally can do, either with J&J or with the mix and match from other products, Fauci said on Fox News Sunday. Fauci also said that people could safely enjoy gathering during the U.S. holiday season if vaccinated, a message to some 66 million eligible people in the country who haven't been inoculated. When you do that, there's no reason at all why you can't enjoy the holidays in a family way, the way we've traditionally done it all along, he said on This Week. And from today's community page, Items Worth Buying, a story by Isabella Zaluska of the Gazette staff. The Domestic Violence Intervention Program is preparing for its 15th annual Shop for Shelter, an event that brings in 9 months' worth of donations for the nonprofit. Shop for Shelter will take place Saturday from 9:30 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. at Hy-Vee stores in Iowa City and Coralville, as well as Iowa City's Fairway at 2765 Commerce Drive. October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month. Volunteers hand out shopping lists at the stores of the items DVIP needs most. There also will be a QR code available to take people directly to the list or to make a monetary donation. Shoppers can purchase the items and leave them with a volunteer as they exit the store. DVIP's Community Engagement Director, Alta Medea Peters, said every donation helps. What's really amazing is the generosity of our community, Medea Peters said. It is goods that we don't have to spend our dollars on and yet provides so much support for individuals. Items on the list include non-perishable foods such as canned soups, rice, spices, coffee, and cooking oil. There also is a need for black hair care products, hygiene products, cleaning supplies, and laundry supplies. What you need in your home And what you run through the most in your home is also what we run through the most in ours, Medea Peters said, adding that DVIP's emergency shelter has 40 beds and is full 365 days of the year. DVIP has seen an uptick of individuals needing assistance, Medea Peters said. During the last fiscal year, which ran from July 1 to June 30, DVIP served 2,189 individuals in its 8-county region. In Iowa City, DVIP served 1,145 individuals, just under double the number who needed assistance the previous year. Medea Peters said many victims have been forced to isolate with their abusers due to the COVID-19 pandemic, which has increased and really made obvious the need for our services. A total of 869 instances of relationship violence were reported to the Iowa City Police Department in 2020, which resulted in 255 arrests, according to the police department. In 2021, there have been more than 700 reports so far, the department said in a news release. DVIP had to shift its outreach due to the pandemic. Medea Peters said DVIP worked on increasing its social media presence and also partnered with CHOMP Delivery to include flyers in to-go food bags. The nonprofit helps individuals with safety planning, connecting them with resources, appointments, and housing. The organization was able to permanently house 71% of clients in the last fiscal year, which is a 7% increase over the previous year, Medea Peters said. That increase in housing is due to the increase in funding support that we received because of COVID, as well as individuals needing more permanent solutions for their situations, Medea Peters said. DVIP also has an emergency pet shelter and mobile advocacy where staff meets victims where it's safest for them. Shop for Shelter needs about 80 volunteers. Individuals interested in volunteering can sign up through a Google form on dvipiowa.org. DVIP's services are free and confidential. Individuals needing assistance or information can call the organization's 24-hour hotline at 800-373-1043 or visit dvipiowa.org. And we have a few Eastern Iowa briefs this morning. The first one is entitled, Help Welcome Back Eastern Iowa Honor Flight Veterans Tuesday. On Tuesday, the Eastern Iowa Honor Flight will launch Honor Flight number 41. There are 89 veterans scheduled for this flight, 3 from World War II, 17 from the Korean conflict, 68 from the Vietnam era, and 1 from another era. Since Eastern Iowa Honor Flight began operations in 2009, it has transported 3,613 veterans, plus their guardians, to Washington, D.C. to visit the memorials dedicated to their service and sacrifice. Veterans will begin reporting into the Eastern Iowa Airport at 5:45 a.m. Tuesday, with an estimated departure time of 7:15 a.m. Estimated return time to Cedar Rapids, barring any delays, is 8:45 p.m. The community is invited to come out and welcome home our veterans. Parking is free. Come early as the lots fill up quickly. You can park in either long-term or short-term lots. When you come into the terminal, please stop by and pick up your free parking pass. Masks currently are required while inside the airport. When you leave that night, give both the ticket and the one you got when you pulled into the lot to the personnel at the exit. Look for the marked Honor Flight lane, and you are good to go. Many veterans never received a thank you welcome home when they returned from their service. Here is a chance to make up for that. Organizers hope to see a large crowd at the airport on Tuesday evening. And from Lisbon, Fur Fun Rescue receives $5,000 grant for spay-neuter procedures. Fur Fun Rescue has been awarded a $5,000 grant from the Bissell Pet Foundation for spay and neuter procedures to be performed at Cedar Rapids Area Veterinary Clinics. This dedicated grant will help reduce the homeless pet population by preventing unwanted litters of stray dogs in the community. With thousands of dogs abandoned each year, spaying and neutering address the root cause of animal overpopulation. By preventing unwanted births, space for pets in need is freed up at rescues and shelters. For more information about Fur Fun Rescue, visit www.furfunrescue.org. And a program helps Iowa residents pay for their past due water bills. More than $10 million in federal aid is available to Iowans who have past due water bills and may face disconnection. The state of Iowa has received more than $10 million from the federal government as part of the Low-Income Household Water Assistance Program. Those interested in applying for financial assistance on past due water bills may now apply. The payment is made directly to the water vendors on behalf of the household. Funds from the Water Bill Assistance Program are being distributed through the Hawkeye Area Community Action Program Waterfront Office. To apply, call HACAP at 319-337-5765 or visit www.hacap.org. To find additional utility, energy, or rent assistance, visit iowafinance.com or call Johnson County Social Services for assistance at 319-356-6090. Iowa City also offers a utility discount program for income-eligible customers. For more information, call Consumer Service at 319-356-5066 or visit icgov.org/utilities. We also have several things to do today. The first is a museum exhibit entitled Band 141, 140 Years of Hawkeye Marching Excellence. You can view a collection of materials from the Hawkeye Marching Band's history from 7 a.m. to 11 p.m. at the Voxman Music Building at 93 East Burlington Street in Iowa City. The cost is free, and it's for all ages. And we also have a museum exhibit entitled From Revolutionary Outcast to a Man of God, Dostoevsky at 200. This exhibition covers the entirety of Russian writer Fyodor Dostoevsky's prolific literary career, and it's from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. at the main library gallery at the University of Iowa Libraries. The cost is free, and it's for all ages. And we have Mother Goose on the Loose. It's a virtual nursery rhyme program for newborns to three-year-olds from the Cedar Rapids Public Library. It's at 9:30 a.m. online at www.crlibrary.org. The cost is free, and it's for all ages. And we have another museum exhibit entitled 10th Annual Bead Challenge Opening and Exhibit. Come see the talents of customers who met the 10th Annual Bead Challenge. They took a package with various beads and supplies and designed a variety of items. It's from 5 to 7 p.m. at Beadology, Iowa, at 220 East Washington Street in Iowa City. The cost is free. It's also for all ages. And we have a health fitness activity called NAMI, N-A-M-I, Connection Recovery Support Group, a free peer-led support group for any adult who is experiencing symptoms of a mental health condition. More information is at https://nami.org/support-education/support-groups/NAMI-connection. It's at 6 p.m. at the NAMI of Linn County, National Alliance on Mental Illness, at 610 2nd Avenue Southeast in Cedar Rapids. And the cost is free. It's for folks 18 and older. And we have a music activity entitled Licorice Shtick, a Red Cedar Chamber Music's Directors and Core Ensemble, violinist Miera Kim and cellist Carrie Bastian, are joined by clarinetist Christine Bellamy and violist Elizabeth Oakes. It's at 7:30 p.m. at the Kimmel Theater at 820 Commons Circle in Mount Vernon. The cost is free, and it's for all ages. And our pet of the week is Mellow. Mellow is a 3-year-old male medium orange and white cat available for adoption at the Cedar Rapids Animal Care and Control at 7241 Washington View Parkway Southwest. Mellow can be shy at first, but is gentle and affectionate after gaining trust and confidence. Call 319-286-5993 to set up an appointment or for more information. Also, a driver dies in a UTV crash. One person died Sunday evening when a utility vehicle rolled into a ditch north of Central City, the Linn County Sheriff's Office said. Shortly after 5 p.m., deputies, a sheriff's rescue team, the Central City Fire Department, and Area Ambulance Service responded to a call of a crash near 5006 Red School Road, authorities said. They found that the driver, whose name has not yet been released, was ejected from a 2020 Polaris General UTV as it was headed north on the road, which is east of Highway 13. The driver, who the sheriff's office said was not wearing a seatbelt or a helmet, was pronounced dead at the scene. The driver was the only one in the UTV, and no other vehicles were involved. The crash remains under investigation. Also from the Iowa Today section, deer strike adds to worries about broken supply chain. The strike comes as farmers are in the midst of harvest season. This is a story by Brooklyn Dracy of the Quad City Times. Last week, DeWitt farmer Joe Dierks ordered a new corn head tip for his combine. The part was bent, but although it was still operational, it needed to be fixed. Usually, Dierks would have the part 2 or 3 days after ordering it. However, with pandemic-caused supply shortages and now a Deere & Company strike, he couldn't even get an estimate on when it will arrive. "I'm kind of caught in the middle of it," Dierks said. UAW workers in Iowa, Illinois, and Kansas took to the picket line last week after the 10,000-strong union and Deere & Company, better known as John Deere, failed to reach an agreement by Thursday. The strike, depending upon how long it lasts, could hurt already struggling supply chains. October is harvest season and the busiest time of year for John Deere dealer Sloan Implement in Fulton, Illinois, store manager Eric Maloney said. Sloan Instrument has dealt with delays on orders without knowing when they'll arrive throughout the COVID-19 pandemic, and parts from all across the board have been hard to stock. "The most important thing is keeping machines working through harvest, or about 6 weeks. The dealer has been relying more than usual on repairing parts rather than replacing them, and that practice will continue. We're going to just keep right on forging ahead as best we can," Maloney said. Deere has been sending out communications to the dealers, Maloney said, and what he's heard indicates the company is working to continue production of parts. Deere still is accepting orders and has other employees filling in for union workers. Right now, he isn't sure how much the strike will affect supply, but availability of parts will be the most immediate impact. The ideal situation is for the UAW to be able to work out an agreement and get it signed as soon as possible, get everything running back to normal, Maloney said. Visiting local dealerships, Dirks said it's apparent they don't have the stock they usually would. There aren't as many tractors, combines, and other pieces of equipment sitting out for sale, and the shelves don't carry parts they usually have in abundance. This strike is just compounding kind of a bad situation, Dirks said. He hopes a deal is struck before he and other farmers start ordering parts in February for spring planting. Once harvest is finished, crop farmers won't have to worry about much until late winter, but livestock farmers may need equipment throughout the colder months, he said. Rob Ewolt, a soybean and livestock farmer outside Davenport, said he's not had issues so far with getting parts that he needs. But the strike is a concern. Many what-ifs could become real problems, like equipment failure or need to replace a part that just can't be found. Those what-ifs can snowball. If an integral part breaks, he may not be able to replace it. And if he can't replace it, the equipment may not run right or at all. If it can't run, he can't harvest. He knows one farmer with a broken combine and no assurances that it will be fixed soon. That's a crop that we grow, we sell to pay our bills, and if we can't harvest it and sell it, we're in trouble, Ewolt said. Deere is known for its availability of parts and good, reliable equipment, Dirk said. Those are the main reasons people buy Deere products. And if they don't keep having that availability of parts, it'll be a concern for all of us. And that does it for today's reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for today, Monday, October 18. I'm your reader, Ken Lauder. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website at iowaradioreading.org at any time. And thank you for listening.